Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
Rishi Sunak is set to become the UK's new prime minister. Will he restore stability?
I think there was a sense of relief, really, in the House of Commons today. There was really a sense that a new chapter is starting here, and that the sort of madness and chaos that have really engulfed this place for the last several years could finally be coming to some sort of an orderly end. But with British politics, you never know.
And Chinese markets tumble as Xi Jinping claims a third term in office. Plus, what's got salmon fishers hooked on Chicago? It's Monday, October 24th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The five biggest U.S.-listed Chinese companies, including Alibaba and JD.com, lost more than $55 billion in market value today. That's after Xi Jinping claimed a third term as leader, cementing control over China's ruling Communist Party. Stocks in mainland China and Hong Kong fell sharply. The Hang Seng Index lost 6.4%, its biggest one-day decline since the global financial crisis. As we reported this morning, Xi is facing deepening economic challenges. China's economy grew by 3.9% last quarter from a year earlier. And while that's above economists' expectations, it's likely to mean a miss for the official full-year target of 5.5%. U.S. stocks, meanwhile, pushed higher to start off a busy earnings week. Nearly a third of the S&P 500, 161 companies, are reporting this week, according to FactSet. And investors are awaiting earnings from big tech companies, including Amazon, Apple, Meta, and Google parent Alphabet. Two Chinese intelligence officials have been charged with trying to bribe a U.S. official. Federal prosecutors say they were after what they believed was inside information about the U.S. criminal case against Chinese telecom giant Huawei. Prosecutors made the allegations in a case that was unsealed today. Attorney General Merrick Garland detailed the charges in a press conference.
The government of China sought to interfere with the rights and freedoms of individuals in the United States and to undermine our judicial system that protects those rights. They did not succeed. The Justice Department will not tolerate attempts by any foreign power to undermine the rule of law upon which our democracy is based.
Huawei is not named in the complaint, which instead refers to an unnamed telecommunications company based in China. But people familiar with the case say it concerns Huawei. Federal officials have long warned that Huawei could be weaponized by the Chinese government for cyber spying or hacking. The Chinese embassy in Washington and Huawei did not immediately respond to a request for comment. But both China and Huawei have repeatedly denied earlier allegations of wrongdoing. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas has temporarily blocked an attempt to get Republican Senator Lindsey Graham to testify about efforts to subvert President Biden's 2020 election victory. The South Carolina lawmaker was subpoenaed after he called the Georgia Secretary of State following the election. The Fulton County District Attorney has been investigating efforts by former President Donald Trump and his allies to steal Biden's victory by pressuring election officials. Both Graham and Trump deny wrongdoing. The full Supreme Court could weigh in on whether Graham can be compelled to testify at a later date. We report exclusively that telehealth company Cerebral has told staff it'll be cutting about 20% of its workforce as it restructures its operations. In a memo reviewed by The Wall Street Journal, Cerebral's CEO said the changes will be spread across the company, including headquarters, clinical care, and support staff. A spokesman says the company is streamlining operations while also prioritizing clinical quality and safety. Over the past year, some of Cerebral's advertising and prescription practices have become subject to investigations by the Federal Trade Commission and the Justice Department. The company has said it's cooperating. And a new report from the Department of Education shows students' math levels fell in every single state during the pandemic, and a nationwide plunge in reading since 2019 has wiped out three decades of gains. The losses were widespread, and our education reporter Ben Chapman says experts are divided on the role that school policies over shutdowns and remote learning may have played.
During the pandemic, some states made a big deal about shutting down schools. Others made a big deal about staying open, with the idea that this would help preserve instruction. But what these test scores show is everybody took a hit, sort of whether their schools were open or not.
The data, which scored fourth and eighth graders, also shows demographic gaps in achievement growing wider. Black and Hispanic students in the fourth grade saw greater score drops in math than white students. And the gap between students who receive free and reduced price lunches and those who don't also widened. Coming up, Rishi Sunak faces a series of political and economic challenges as he becomes the next UK Prime Minister. How he plans to address them after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Rishi Sunak will become the UK's new prime minister, its third in just 7 weeks. His ascension follows Liz Truss's resignation last week, former Prime Minister Boris Johnson's decision to pull out of the race, saying he couldn't unite the party, and Sunak's only remaining rival for the job, Penny Mordaunt, also announcing that she too would bow out. Sunak will be the first person of color and the first Hindu to lead the UK. At 42, he's also the youngest UK prime minister in more than 200 years. But he's facing a heap of challenges, from uniting his sharply divided Conservative Party to taming inflation and heading off a looming recession for the world's sixth biggest economy. So how does he plan to do it? Joining me now from outside at the House of Commons is Wall Street Journal UK correspondent Max Colchester. Welcome back, Max.
Nice to be with you.
So, Max, this is an historic moment in British politics. Tell us more about how Sunak rose to lead the Conservative Party and ultimately become Prime Minister.
Yes, Rishi Sunak embodies a slightly strange thing in the UK, that he's both a symbol of deep change, the first Hindu Prime Minister in the country's history, and one of the youngest as well, aged just 42. But his background in many ways is quite traditional. He went to a very posh private school in the UK that's actually educated many prime ministers in this country before going to Oxford University and then Goldman Sachs and then into the hedge fund world. So he mixes this sort of unusual background, and that his parents are of Indian origin, with a very traditional route to power.
And he comes to power as his party is deeply divided. How does he plan to bring the party back together, Max, and what if he can't?
One of the key messages that Sunak is going to play up in the coming days is how he can bring this very deeply divided Conservative Party back together. He's promised to bring in people to his cabinet from all wings of the party to try and create that sense of unity. His pitch today, as I was talking to a few of the Conservative lawmakers just after they spoke to him, it was very much his, look, now's the time to come together. We've had 7 weeks of really unparalleled chaos here with three prime ministers in the UK in that time frame. And now we've just got to stop squabbling and pull together and try and fix the economic headwinds that are facing the country right now. Otherwise, the electorate will never forgive us, and the Conservative Party will not return to power at the next elections expected in 2024. And I think there was a sense of relief, really, in the House of Commons today. There was really a sense that a new chapter is starting here, and that the sort of madness and chaos that have really engulfed this place for the last several years could finally be coming to some sort of an orderly end. But with British politics, you never know.
And he is, of course, facing two big challenges when it comes to the economy, rising inflation and a looming recession. Sunak had called Liz Truss's economic plan a, quote, fairy tale. So what is his plan going forward, and what are the key challenges he'll face?
Basically, what happened is this summer, Rishi Sunak campaigned to become prime minister to replace Boris Johnson, and he was up against Ms. Truss, and he said what Ms. Truss was proposing, which is, i.e., tax cuts to stimulate the economy at a time of very fast increases of inflation was fairy tale economics, that you would effectively force the Bank of England to increase interest rates very rapidly, which would then immediately crush the economy as people face vast mortgage repayments. And that, in a weird way, did give him credibility with the markets. But what it didn't do is give him any credibility with Conservative Party members, who felt he was being far too negative about the state of the British economy and didn't have a sort of joyous outlook for where Britain could be heading. So in a way, it wasn't electorally smart for him to say it, but it made sense from a market's perspective. His plan is a return to classic fiscal conservatism. It's going to be about essentially a government that pays its own way, that raises taxes to fill budget deficits or cuts public spending. So I think that the problem here is that we're going to enter a recession likely at the end of the year, and Rishi Sunak is going to announce that taxes are going up and that public spending is going down, and that's going to hit a lot of people very hard.
During Truss's short tenure as Prime Minister, we saw the UK government acting at odds with the Bank of England. So how are Sunak's plans likely to impact the Bank of England?
Well, Sunak's plans are going to be potentially a positive development, actually, in the sense that the Bank of England and the government will be working in tandem to try to bring inflation down by cooling the economy. And that is a key message that Sunak is going to put across, is that he wants to tame inflation before then trying any stimulus through tax cuts. So that's going to be the real difference we see between Ms. Truss and Rishi Sunak.
What can you tell us about market reaction so far?
Well, so far, the market's broadly expressed relief. We've seen the amount of interest that the government has to pay on its debts fall as bond yields fall. And we've seen the pound slightly strengthening. So it's shown that investors are sort of welcoming back a fiscal normality, if we can call it that, after what was 6 weeks of absolute madness, frankly, here.
That's Wall Street Journal UK correspondent Max Colchester. Max, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Bye.
And finally, Chicago is known as the home of deep dish pizza and the Cubs. But what about salmon fishing? Around this time of year, the city turns into an unlikely paradise for anglers when Chinook and Coho salmon return to their spawning lagoons there. The annual ritual feeds a $7 billion sport fishing economy in the Great Lakes region. But how did these normally ocean-faring salmon become Windy City residents in the first place? Our senior reporter Joe Barrett says they were brought in to tackle an issue with the lake's ecosystem.
There have been these waves of invasive species over the last, you know, seven decades. And the first was from this really scary-looking fish called the sea lamprey. It looks like something out of a horror movie, and it basically attaches itself to bigger fish and sucks out their vital fluids. Another invasive species called the alewife just exploded, and the population was so large that when they died off, they covered beaches. Right now, they've just turned to salmon as sort of the top predator to keep these other fish in check, and it's really worked out. There's a ton of people out there fishing, they're enjoying it, and they're controlling these other species that have come in through various ways into the Great Lakes.
Of course, that raises the question, can you eat them? Well, due to high concentrations of contaminants in the water, the Illinois Department of Health recommends consuming no more than one meal of some Lake Michigan salmon a month. And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.